Hey guys, Joel here, and I just like to say a big apologies if you are expecting, waiting eagerly for a double dose of Devon Dice podcast to come out each month. It's almost just one a month at the minute. That's excluding Unhinged, which is his own entity with me and Lewis. But if you are sitting there and like saying, where's my podcast each twice a month? I do apologize. No, we are breaking a forsaken law in podcasting that you should always be regular to keep your fans happy. It's just been too busy for us recently to do it. We are all professionals within our jobs, and we should be more professional at this, really. So we do promise you we're going to get back on schedule and start giving you your regular podcasts again. So stick with us. We will make it up to you. Let's get on with this podcast.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Devon Dice Podcast 47. This episode is called A Monopoly Is Never Good, and it is brought to you by our sponsor, Meeple's Corner, and was recorded on the 5th of April, 2018. Tonight's show, Joel talks about getting lost in Exploriana. Lewis is spellbound by Harry and a load of rabbits, and Sam tries his luck to rise in the ranks of nobility. And as always, we have the news and the latest Kickstarters from the board gaming industry.
I'm your host, Joel Wright, and joining me tonight is
Sam Freeman, finally again.
He's back!
At last.
And also, the other voice you can hear
is Lewis James.
Yay! Hello, everyone. Who keeps inviting him back?
Lewis 2.0.
Lewis 2.0. I like that. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, can we change my name to Lewis 2.0? Yes. I like it already.
We could have old Lewis or young Lewis. It depends.
Yeah, but then is old Lewis the older person or the person who used to be
The
podcast Lewis?
He's both. Both. You're right. You're safe.
Oh, okay. I cover both grounds then. Do you think I can change my name by by deed poll, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lewis 2.0. I really like the sound of that.
My favourite deed poll story ever is a guy used to be on a chat forum that me and my friends used to use, and his name was Chris Walmsley, and he changed his name by deed poll to Chris Ramblebob von Iron Maggot Walmsley, which was possibly the finest naming I've ever heard of in my life. But his official name became Ramblebob von Iron Maggot.
That is strong. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine change his name on Facebook to something like Ramble Bottom Fimblesby the Third, like as a joke for a weekend while he was drunk. But Facebook don't let you keep changing your name. They basically let you change your name basically once, and then you have to get like super permission to do others. And so he basically stayed as that. Thaddeus. It was Thaddeus Gretel Dorb the Third. That was it. And so it was on Facebook. He's just forever known as Thaddeus. That's how he went. His real name's Dan.
Yes. So we are finally back again for another podcast this month. It seems to be a regular just once a month at the minute. We're just trying to get things straightened out, and my job is taking its toll on me. So hopefully maybe we'll get back to more regular postings of podcasts. But we did do an Unhinged podcast with old Lewis, or Lewis 0.1. that was good fun. So he's keen to come back, because if you didn't hear, we're going to talk about Ready Player One on the next Unhinged.
Yeah, and I'm going to make sure I've seen it before that happens.
Yeah,
are you going to go see it, Lewis?
Yeah, I've already got a mandate planned with my mate. So.
Excellent. Nice. I might be soloing that myself. But the YouTube channel is sprinting along with lots of videos going up. I have a ton of raw footage in my phone at the minute, all ready to be edited and put up. And Lewis is doing a couple, aren't you, Lewis?
Yes. Just filmed the unboxing of the Century Golem edition, which is the special edition version of Plan B's Century Spice Road. And so hopefully we'll get that edited and get that one up within the next few days. So hopefully people enjoy that.
Definitely.
Nice. It's quite a nice unboxing to watch, actually. Some really cracking artwork on the cards and some really really sexy gameplay pieces. You can tell it's
all such a shame that up. It sounds like they're not going to do the version of Eastern Promise.
Yeah, don't talk to me about that, Sam.
I reckon if they sell enough of the Crystal the Golem edition, then I could see it still coming. I reckon they chucked that. They did it with the whole, we've done the artwork and everything anyway, so we'll just release it. And I think that's rubbish. I think they're going to actually see what happens if they release the two editions, which they were planning to do originally anyway, when it was called whatever it was called before. Can't remember what it was called now. Caravan. So I reckon they've done it, and they've gone, well, if this sells anywhere near as well as Century Spice Road, then we'll do a version of Eastern Promise as well.
Yeah, I think what they've talked about is using it as the base for a set of another trilogy.
Oh yeah, that would be good as well. Yeah,
yeah. So making it different, but still being linking to the sort of two other games that make a whole bigger game.
Yeah,
that's good.
Which will be interesting to see. They bloody better.
Yeah, that seems a total waste if they don't do something like that.
Well, what is it? What is a total waste is changing what is a really innovative, beautiful game into another boring trading game. With little wooden cubes. I can't fathom why.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good idea. Definitely. So on to what we've been playing. I'm going to start off with this, and this is actually a prototype. It's not out yet. It's arriving on Kickstarter this month.
It's an absolute corker.
And Lewis has just spoiled it. And it's called, let's just get straight to it, shall we? It's called Exploriana, and it's by Miles Radcliffe. He's a British designer, and he's a publisher as well. But there's a collaboration going on here with Ace Games Publishing and Chance Encounters, the cafe. They're all combined to bring this game forward. And it's basically a push your luck game, along the lines as Bang the Dice game, maybe. What's that one, Lewis? What's the one I can't think of?
Which one? Celestia?
Celestia, that's it.
Celestia or Diamond. That's that kind of genre, but kind of next level, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's as Lewis has spoiled it already, it is a really good game. We've been playing this non-stop, and for a prototype and for a game, like a preview game, it's unheard of, really. Sometimes we get some preview games and it's like, play it once or twice and that's all right. Yeah, that's fine. That's all right. Talk about it a bit. But this has really hit the mark, and
yeah, could play it over and over again.
Definitely,
so, such good fun.
Haven't got a problem. It plays quite quickly, so that's a bonus. It's basically you are explorers going off around like South America, Africa, and Asia, and you're trying to find goodies. But it's kind of set collection, really, in that kind of sense. And you're trying to earn the most points possible at the end of the game. At the beginning of each round, there's a phase of auction, where you're kind of trying to buy items to help you on your journey. And that's really simple. Once round auction of a few items that get turned over. And then you go off exploring, and it's kind of worker placement. You kind of have these two pawns and you put them out into spots of what continents you want to explore. And you just basically go down this ladder formation of these pawns, starting with South America, South America, then going to Africa, and then going to Asia. And whoever's first, highest in the goes, and all they do is either they're going to turn over a card and hope they don't bust by getting three of the same hazards or three different hazards turn up in the cards. Once they get the five cards, they have to make a decision to pick some of the cards from there. If they do bust out, lost traveler tokens go on the board, and they can be picked as well, and they can be random scoring points, and it goes on like that. So you're really just trying to collect a lot of different cards and make the most points possible, and it all comes down to good old Pedro Pedro the tour guide.
Pedro.
Who gets you lost every time.
He does. Yeah, he's a little mechanic to try and twist the odds in your favour by sort of covering up one of the kind of already turned over hazard markers. Yeah, it always works out that every turn that you decide to bring Pedro along, you always seem to get lost and go bust anyway. So Pedro's got a bit of a bad rep in our group.
What's funny is that you can buy this tour guide. It's just a token, and it's called a guide. And you buy this for $2, and you put it on one of the hazard markers, so it cancels it out for your turn. But like, if he does happen to do a really bad job and get you lost, you can actually get a refund.
He gives you a refund.
It's like you've gone back to the village and say, that bloody Pedro you sent out with just gone and got us lost or got us injured with a wild animal. I want my money back, God damn it. But, so yeah, we've been playing the snot out of this game and really loving it. So I can't wait for the Kickstarter to come along and be backing it for a real product.
Yeah, insta-buy my book.
Definitely. And I will bring it along for you to see, Sam, when I get a chance to come back to Tuesday night.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like my kind of game. I like a good pushy luck game, so sounds good.
But it's really clever because there's a lot of very, you know, really clever concepts to it that really just kind of take it to that next level. With sort of, you know, set collection, and there's all sorts of, you know, different strategies you can try and sort of bring to the table to try and maximize your points, but you've still got that kind of push your luck element each round, and it's just really good fun.
So what have you been playing then, Lewis?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Joel. I've been playing quite a few new things actually in the last month, one of which was a kind of a complete accident that I kind of came across. It was actually really quite a good game, surprisingly, and that was Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. My little nephew had his birthday beginning of the month, and he loves Harry Potter. And I thought, well, this game's getting okay reviews. I'm always trying to get people into games. I'm sure he'll love a bit of Harry Potter. So I bought it for them. We went up to visit them in Wiltshire. And I think we've played it pretty much solidly every time we've sort of been there. And it's quite good fun. So we're playing it with an 8-year-old, an 11-year-old, their dad, and me. That's because it's a sort of 4-player max game. We're all the way up to level 6 of 7 now. It's a kind of... it's a classic sort of deck builder, very much on a similar lines of Legendary. There's kind of bad guys out that you've got to try and allocate damage to, while also, you know, there's cards that are being turned over that are dealing you damage and otherwise throwing things in the mix, and just Harry Potter themes, all the characters and as such bits, and there's sort of combos you can sort of put together to get the right cards for your decks, and there's individual player powers for the different characters, and it's actually surprisingly good. I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, it's the greatest game I've ever played, but I always have particularly low expectations of any game that has such a big IP, especially something as big as Harry Potter. But it's been surprisingly fun. I'm more than happy to play it when they always want to play it. It's been a massive hit for my family, and they've had an absolute whale of a time.
Awesome. So who's having more fun, you or the kids?
Probably actually them. They're constantly arguing, constantly want to keep playing it. They're kind of, let's play again. Like, okay, yeah, we can have quite happy to play again. They definitely want to break it out. They really, really, really like it. I mean, I'm having a perfectly good time. But the interesting thing is my brother-in-law, actually, because I mean he's not backs a game, but he's not sort of a gamer. But he really loves it. It's a direct quote was, this is the best game that I've played with you. And I brought along some pretty quality games for him, so I question his tastes, but you know, can't win them all. But there's won this one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That sounds good. I've always been intrigued by it. I'm not a big cooperative fan, so that's like the reason I wouldn't necessarily want to play it myself. But same sort of situation. My niece, I think she's from memory, she's 8, I think now. And she's a massive Harry Potter fan, and I was thinking that might have to be Christmas present this year. It'll be a good one, and because they like playing games, but they don't have that many. I've bought them like Rhino Hero and things like that in the past, but it feels like this could be the next step up, which would be quite nice.
It is, yeah, and because it's got a bit of a legacy element to it, where you sort of you introduce new cards and new rules as you sort of open up new boxes as you complete sort of the different levels, and they're kind of based loosely on the books, the sort of the new cards that you get and the new enemies that you've got to sort of kill. So there's sort of 7 in total, and so, you know, it starts off as, you know, very 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 basic, kind of insta win, but sort of ramps up, becomes quite challenging towards the end. Actually, you know, you gotta like any good sort of co-op, you've got to hope for a smattering of luck, but at the same time you've got to be taking the chances that are kind of thrown your way with the right cards that are coming up, and collaborate as a team because there's a kind of a market available, and obviously with the individual player power, certain cards are more useful for other players, for different players. So there's a lot of sort of, you know, discussion of, well, look, guys, I know you can all buy that good card, but if I get it, it's twice as good, kind of thing. And if you get that card, that's twice as good if you get that one. So there's a lot of working together, and it's really quite good, actually.
Well, I won't be playing it because my kids are not Harry Potter fans at all.
Oh dear! What have you done to them, Joel?
They like anything that's really culture based kind of thing. It's like, come on, let's watch this old 80s film that I used to love. No, Dad, don't want to watch that. But it's great. It's Back to the Future. No, the oldest ones are YouTube, isn't it? Everything's on YouTube at the minute. Or Nickelodeon. Bloody Nickelodeon. Yes. Anyway.
But Nickelodeon was about when we were kids as well.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, it was a thing. Rugrats. Remember Rugrats?
I suppose so, yeah. Suppose so. Anyway, Bunny Kingdom, eh?
Yes. Also, I finally got to play a game of Bunny Kingdom, which I was quite keen to. Obviously, it's a new game by the designer of Magic, whose name has gone completely out of my head.
Richard Garfield.
Thank you, Garfield. Richard Garfield. Interesting little drafting game, quite entertaining, quite fun, very pasted on theme. No idea why it's got bunnies. I guess they decided that would make it more fun and appealing, but you know, I'm not adverse to it. Basically, you're sort of drafting cards, which the vast majority of them relate to sort of squares on a grid, and then you get to claim that particular square, and then you're trying to basically get your squares to match up or not match up, depending on what you're trying to do, and claim different areas of the board. That'll get you certain points as the rounds go on. You're also collecting victory point cards, which will get you end game scoring. It is fun. The game's perfectly fine. It's a very simple drafting area control type game. It's got a few downsides. I think when I played it, I was pretty cross at the end. I slated it quite a lot.
You had a right whinge on.
It's back to my classic moaning of hidden superpower cards, which is the end game scoring cards can be worth huge amounts of points, and it can, they just sort of go to the player who happened to pick them up first, and I didn't mind that because I hadn't quite comprehended just how many of these end game scoring cards there were, and there were hundreds. I mean, two thirds of everyone's score was not the game you've been playing for the last 2 hours, which is already far too long anyway. Like 2/3 of the points were just on these cards that you just sort of collected along the way. Sometimes because you just sort of been given them at the end, sometimes because you happen to have picked the best thing in the first place. And so you just kind of think, why have I just played a 2-hour game for it all just to come down to these sort of random superpower cards? And there's just too many of them, which was a bit annoying. And I think partly I hadn't realized just how many points were going to come from those end game scoring cards. In the actual game itself, I was, you know, almost double the score of everyone else, but ended up coming second because somebody else had got all these end game scoring cards, which I just found frustrating, and I probably took out on the game a little bit too much. It's fun, it's fine, it's simple. The main issue I have with it, though, is it has an horrendous amount of admin that goes with it. I mean, you score at the end of each of the four rounds, and just being able to see what you're scoring and then work it out takes forever. And the final round as well, by the time you're scoring up all these cards, and there are some endgame scoring cards that you collect that say, copy the endgame scoring card of somebody on your left. So you're adding up all these other bits that takes forever anyway. Then you're adding up all your cards, and then you have to wait for somebody else to add up all their cards so that you can then choose which one of their cards you want to take. And I mean, the end game scoring must have taken at least 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just like, and we've been doing scoring every round throughout the game. And for as simple as game as it is, it's not, for me, I don't think it was worth that investment. But, you know, it's not a bad game.
I don't know why it took you 2 hours, because every game I've played has just been about an hour, hour and a bit. So
I mean,
it's probably your AP kicking in, just holding up the proceedings.
No, I mean, it was three out of four of us' first game. I don't think we were particularly fast, but nobody felt, you know, crazy slow. But it just seemed like a bit of too much admin. And
there is, I mean, at first it's like, it's quite daunting because you get 10 cards and you've got to look at all these 10 cards and you're like, right, what am I going to pick from these 10 cards? I've got to pick two cards. And then you're looking at the grid and then you're kind of working out, where can I go? And you're trying to, like, future plan as well. It's like, right, if I just do this, hopefully, maybe, smattering of a chance, I might get the card I need just to join these up. Might happen, might not. And yes, you're right, the scoring's a bit arduous, if that's a good term. Yeah. It is basic multiplication, but not everything multiplicates. It's very complex. I mean, you couldn't give this to kids and say, here, let's play this great game of bunnies, and it's a gamer's game at the end of the day.
But again, I don't think it's got enough depth for me to be
a game.
Or actually, that's probably a bit untrue. I think part of the issue that I had with it is I didn't fully appreciate the point scoring card, the end point scoring cards, and just how much they were worth. I think there was probably more strategy and more depth to me paying more attention to them during the game. But again, that's not the kind of game I want to play. I was kind of playing a board game, which was about getting
they serve a purpose of trying to lead you in a direction of trying to do something. Instead of just saying, oh, I'm sticking bunnies here, here, and here. It's like, well, I've picked up these cards. I need to work towards them. That kind of thing. I need to have 5 carrot fields. I need to have 9 cities, things like that going on. And then, oh, actually, this card combines with this card already picked, which I'm working towards anyway. So I think that those cards do help you out. And yes, copying your neighbor's cards.
Too many of them.
Yeah, copying your neighbor's cards, maybe they could be taken out because they do kind of really hold it up a bit. But I mean, I enjoy it. Every other person apart from you has enjoyed their games of it. So, and I have to say, I enjoy it because my brother bought it for me on my birthday.
Contractually obliged.
I don't think he listens, but anyway. So I actually do like it. It's quite funny. I can see why it's called Bunny Kingdom, because it's kind of bunnies just multiplying like rabbits do. And spreading across the land. But anyway, but that's fine. It's a good game.
It's a fine game. There are just other games I think I'd rather spend that amount of time and effort on.
Yeah. Anyway, Sam, have you been trying to rise to nobility lately? Have you?
Yeah, and like, I'm crashing back down to earth. But it's I did manage to get a game of Rise to Nobility. Yeah, and there's one particular thing I love about Rise to Nobility, which I'll save to the end. But for those that don't know, it was on Kickstarter last year, I believe. And fans of the show, Richard and Joe, hi Richard and Joe, if you're listening, they backed it, and I got a game of it with them when I went down to their place to do laundry, which I do as often as I possibly can while we've got the building going on. in Rise to Nobility, well, theme wise, it's kind of like a sort of fairly arbitrary fantasy esque setting with different, you know, elves and I'm not sure it's dwarves. There might be dwarves and yes, halflings and that kind of stuff. There is dwarves. Yeah, there is dwarves, isn't there? Mm-hmm. There's stuff like that anyway. You got those kind of races in there. But ultimately what you're doing is it's a sort of a dice worker placement style game of gathering resources to convert into points a little bit. So you're fairly sort of atypical mechanic. But there are some nice, interesting things to do with it. I'm just trying to remind myself of it all now. You've probably played it more recently than me, Lewis, so you could probably help me out. But the idea essentially is that you are attempting to get sort of houses built, if I remember, or build buildings and then house these different races in them, because they're kind of like people that are coming in, like almost like refugees coming to the realm, and you're trying to attract them to your own little thing to impress the king or whoever mm-hmm. it is that's there. And to do that, you're sort of gathering up all these resources. So stuff like, weirdly, things like chairs or magic and books and stuff like that. And you do that with dice. I've forgotten completely
dice
what...
Dice placement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dice placement, but there's various spaces on the board, isn't there, where you've got...
Yeah, so
like,
the start of the round, everyone basically rolls their dice, and there's a quite, you know, fun little sort of limiter. It's kind of another kind of separate resource that decides what your total dice pips can add up
that's
to.
That's right. That's what I was trying to remember.
Based on your reputation or whatever it is, and there's a space that you can use to boost that as well as doing other things that will boost your reputation. And then you're sort of laying dice out. But it's quite clever because it's not entirely about having the highest possible dice, because it's sort of each space that you are collecting bits from, collecting resources from, will let you, you know, the higher the sort of three spaces, one is one and two, one is three and four, the other is five and six, and you have to have those particular dice to go on there, and that let you, the higher the number lets you collect more resources, but the lower the number lets you put out more of your sort of little apprentices, which are the people that Sam was talking about you attract with in your houses, and the apprentices give you bonuses such as extra resources or extra money at the end of the round.
But some of the spaces also kind of do things like I can't remember. Is it the inn? I think where there's like a chain thing. So it's like you've got to kind of place the next dice placed has got to be higher, equal to or higher, and then another one has got to be equal to or lower. Those kinds of things. So there's a couple of other spaces where the dice management kind of come in as well. The market boat thing is another one, isn't it? Where you kind of, if you place a one down, you can sell one resource to the merchant boat, and if you place a four, you can sell up to four resources to the merchant boat in order to generate money. That kind of stuff. So ultimately, though, it's basically just you roll your dice, however many you've got that you want to use or can, and then you see where you can place them to best advantage. So I mean, there's a little bit of AP proneness to it, because you kind of look at it and you go, oh, I could go there and I could go there, or I could do that, or someone's in the previous round, someone's placed a die where you wanted to go and you now can't get your one or two into the space you wanted to go, so you've got to kind of rethink. But ultimately I thought it worked quite well, and I kind of really want to give it another go now, having played it once, and I think we'd probably shave off a good bit of time. I think we played in a three player game or something like I'd say 2 to 2.5 hours. But that was like a tutorial game as well. It was like me learning it for the first time, and Rich and Joe having only played it the once.
It is a very long game, too long for what it is. Again, I think,
But I think familiarity would bring that down quite a lot, because
to an extent, but it just doesn't need to.
I don't
be,
think
it's,
so.
I guess 10 rounds. It just doesn't need to be 10 rounds.
I think you could always bring that down, couldn't you? You could always say we'll play to 8. Or
I know.
I don't know how much
any
of a game you get
that
from
ruling like that. Just should not be.
Well, there's quite a lot.
I think the problem is you can't bring it down 10 rounds. Well, you can, but you'll lose most of the game because
it's kind of engine building stuff, isn't it?
It takes about 3 rounds for someone to first get one of those buildings out onto the board, I reckon, because it's a very slow steady kind of build up. It's like, right, I've got a building out. Now we can start using that. And then it ain't until about round 7, maybe 8, that maybe might be a second or even third building to going into the spots. And then that game element that they designed it for really starts coming into, because it's very similar to Lords of Waterdeep, isn't it? Where you buy buildings, people can use it, you get a benefit if you own the building. This is the same instance. You put buildings out and there's 3 slots for the buildings to go in, and you can own the buildings you put out. And if someone actually goes to this big main spot to get a resource, they can trigger all 3 buildings to go off, which they will benefit from, and so will the owners benefit from. And that's what they were really aiming for on this game, was this kind of mechanic.
I think that's probably one of its best things. One of its best things is
but it takes so long to get to that point.
So it's the best thing, but it's also my biggest criticism of the game, in that those buildings that come out essentially modify the different worker slots and what you get out of them, and in some cases, you know, massively augment them, make them much more desirable than others because someone's kind of changed them. And as the game goes on, you know, spaces get better and better and change, and it makes it's a really interesting kind of mechanic. But it doesn't work, like Joel's saying, because it's so hard to get out the correct building unless you're incredibly lucky. You need quite a large amount of gold, because they're quite costly, and gold's at kind of a premium anyway. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the buildings are lined up at the bottom of the board and all attached to a particular dice denomination. So you must have that particular dice denomination for the particular building that you want. On top of that, each of the buildings will only fit into one particular area. So you have, and in order to build a building, you have got to have already placed an apprentice in that area. So suddenly the ability to get, number one, the building that you want that's out, number two, the right amount of money, number three, having rolled the right die, and then number four, actually have an apprentice in that area, is actually really, really hard. And it's not impossible. You can do it. It just takes a lot of time, a lot of resource, and it makes the game too long. I think I spent 2 or 3 rounds just waiting with the money to get the right building, and you think, and that there is a space where you can refresh the buildings, but that takes up a whole action. So you can end up refreshing the building. Number one, you might not then get a building that you can still might not get a building you can build. And number two, you might end up just helping everyone else to help themselves the buildings you spent the action to refresh to get up in the first place, and you still end up with nothing. And I just sat there for 2 rounds trying to get building, and just this building wouldn't come. I just lost joy by that point.
Or some dick comes along and refreshes the buildings when you've saw one.
Literally the turn that you finally can build a building right in front of you, somebody refreshes it, and of all the 6 buildings, even though you've covered 2/3 of the possible options, not a single one of the buildings you can build comes up. They just go, what is the point of this game? And it's such a shame, because it's a really interesting, clever mechanic, and it's just ruined by...
It's like you said, those buildings shouldn't need to go in the basic guilds, actually.
I think they don't need to be guild specific.
Yeah, they don't need to be guild specific. They just need to be specific.
That is one thing. Yeah, I think that one thing would change quite a lot.
Yeah,
but we've missed the one. I don't know which version of the game. Was it a retail?
No, I picked up a Kickstarter version.
Right, okay. Did it have the metal coins?
No, it did not.
There you go. So the best thing about this, and annoyingly I can't get them now, is the coins that both Richard and Joe and myself think would make perfect metal coin replacements for Clank. Got 50 metal coins. That was an add-on for the Kickstarter, and not everyone took it, because it's, you know, 23 quid's quite a lot for some coins, but it's 50 of them. And but they're 1s and 5s, which is perfect for Clank. And I have been searching on Facebook sales things to try and find someone who's got them, is willing to sell them to me, because I really want them, and I can't find any other coins that are suitable for Clank, or ones that I'd like for Clank, and these ones are just perfect. So I might just have to go to Rich and Joe's and steal theirs.
That'll fix it.
That's why, because you saw me, I bought mine off of someone on Facebook. It was sealed, brand new, straight from Kickstarter. And you were like, oh, the coins are just worth it alone. I was like, yeah, it's not got the coins. He told me that in the first place.
Someone said about it.
But I was only after the game. I didn't realise what you wanted the coins for. So, yeah. But yeah,
perfect replacement for Clank. But anyway, it was about rising ability. I think the other thing is possibly like in terms of the enjoyment. I know I'm always hoodwinked by the presentation of a game at the best of times. And I think to be fair, this game may have done a little bit of that. In the sense that the presentation of it, the components and everything are top notch. You know, the art is great. The custom wooden pieces are cool. The art on the board, the art on the cards, everything is in the quality of the coins, if you had them, you know, those kinds of things. It was all really good. And I think maybe that was one of the things that kind of disguises the fact perhaps that, that there are imperfections in the game a little bit.
There's so many interesting mechanics and bringing together interesting mechanics, but there were just a few things that make the game for me a game.
They needed an aspect to be able to bring out buildings in round one. I think that would start people would wake up and say, "Oh, I can see what this game is doing now." The fact that you have to probably wait until round three, which is probably an hour or more, to get to actually someone buying a building to put it out. It just doesn't make it shine. If there was an aspect where, I don't know, everyone got a chance to put a building in. As soon as you put apprentice in, you had a choice to put a building in some kind of different mechanic implementation, then I think that would have really sparked up the game and make it move on.
And quicker. it doesn't need to then be so long, which makes it more likely to get to the table.
No, it could be seven rounds, really, in that case.
Less than. Absolutely fine. Although, you know, I'll give it this. It's the first game that I've ever played, finished one game of it and gone, "Oh, I really don't like that, but I really want to play another one." Because I felt that there was something there, and I felt that I really liked so many of the little mechanics. I could see how it could work really well. And then the second game is when it really, really kind of hit home to me about it's that buildings. It's the difficulty of getting those buildings out and breaking one of the best mechanics.
Yeah, it's as Nigel said, when we played it with them, it's not a game night game. It's a Sunday afternoon game where you've just got the whole afternoon just to get through it kind of thing. Because you will not complete it if you're doing 6 till 10 or 9:30 in an evening kind of thing. Or 7 maybe by the time you get started. So especially not with 5 people. Mm. Might just do it with 3, but...
Yeah, I think
I wouldn't play it with 5. Yeah, 5 would be crazy.
We did.
Oh, hello.
Has he gone again?
Yeah, sounds like it.
You guys are cutting in and out again.
Just about.
When you listen back to this, Lewis, you'll know that we can hear you quite fine.
Right.
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you again now. Yeah, it's good. One thing I was going to say is it really, I find it really annoying. This game, I think, typifies everything that the Kickstarter haters really, really highlight, because they always say, when we talk to people who really dislike Kickstarter, and I really like Kickstarter, but they always say, "Oh, all it does is it brings games to the market that aren't properly, you know, tested, and properly run through a proper process. So, you know, what could be great games and never reach their potential." And I think this is a prime example of that.
Definitely. Can we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we're going to go on to news, and the biggest news thing to come of since last recording was the fact that Cold Spring Games has been purchased by Asmodee UK, or is it Asmodee the Glomer?
Either way, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Same thing. So if you don't know what Coil Spring Games is, they were basically the only and the second biggest games distributor in the UK. I actually done quite a bit of work for them. I knew one of the press officers there quite well. And it's a real shame that they've now been swallowed up by this big corporation giant that seems to be trying to eat everything to gain the monopoly on board games, quite literally. Which is quite funny.
Yay.
He's back.
He's back.
So yeah, we were actually just discussing this quite early, actually before the podcast recorded. But so yeah, we just thought it was a big shame. Now it's UK all mostly all board games are now coming from one big place.
Which... Yeah, it's not so much that even that they're coming, it's the fact that they control the distribution chain. I'm sure nothing will happen particularly, but it is potentially worrying that essentially they'll be able to distribute their own games for cheap and charge their competitors to distribute their games to their, you know, to the shops and online sellers and stuff. And so it's a little bit, it feels a little bit wrong. I think when Asmodee are buying publishers, you can get around it by saying, well, there's always others. So, you know, you can always set up another studio or do whatever. So as an example of that, it was, you know, Plaid Hat Games being bought, or admittedly by, was it Z-Man? No, who was it? Whatever they were called. Can't remember who it was that bought.
Yeah, they were bought Plaid by Hat. F2Z.
F2Z, that's
first,
right. Yeah.
And then Asmodee, they were bought by...
Yeah, and then Asmodee bought F2Z, but then a splinter of that went off and created Plan B Games. So, you know, there's always avenues to create new games, to release games that aren't Asmodee owned. But there's not really that, in the UK certainly now, there's no way of distributing those games that isn't also via Asmodee. So that's the worrying bit. It's like they're kind of choke-holding supply as well as design. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but... yeah,
it's a strong rule of life, especially in board games as well, I think, that a monopoly is never good.
Yeah, well, there's a title for your podcast this week.
I did. I just thinking of monopoly, I was reading an like one of those kind of list things on Facebook, things you didn't know, and it's about the royal family, and basically monopoly's been banned from the royal household because it causes too many fights and arguments, even with the royals. Even they know when to pull the plug on Monopoly. So,
and obviously they were too polite to say, boring and dull.
Lewis, you know I've got to beat that.
I'm going to edit that out.
This isn't the unplugged.
It's not the unhinged cast. Unhinged.
But I mean, when it comes to Monopoly, I mean, come on, it's loud, surely. It's such a bad game.
Oh dear. Anyway, so that's the biggest, saddest. We'll see what comes of it.
Yeah,
but
industry news. Yeah.
Hopefully, prices won't start short. Cold Spring didn't do a great deal of board games. They had the likes of, it's completely gone at me, Wright Games. So, who done Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert.
Game Right, sorry, that's it.
Game Right, and
those were good co-ops.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they had some others on their books. A couple you probably don't. Spaghetti is one of them, and things like that. So we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah,
but it's a shame in a way, but this is it. Maybe there'll be Meeple Corner distribution opening up soonly.
Yeah, exactly.
See it, conglomerate. Yeah.
There's the advert services, plug. Advert plug done. Right, next one. Shall we quickly do who won Geek Awards?
It'll be very quick. Gloomhaven won everything, and Seventh Continent got second.
Yeah. Although, what was interesting, I was very pleased to see that Photosynthesis won the best presentation category.
All right.
And I do very much like that game, and one of the reasons I think is because it looks so nice. But also, I really like the gameplay.
The other one that was quite nice is that Azul cropped up on quite a few as well, which was nice. That was one of my favourite games in hindsight. I can't remember what I said was my favourite game last year now, but I think Azul kind of it's constantly there in my head now. And I think if I could retrospectively change my game of the year for last year, I think I might go Azul now.
Amazingly. Really?
Yeah,
you can't, by the way, but
it's locked in.
Yeah. Oh, fine. It will be my game of the year this year.
When was it released?
Every year.
When was it released?
Yeah. Well, no. I. It's one of those games. I just kind of. I really want to play that every time. Every time I see it, I'm like, yeah, I really fancy a game of that. But anyway,
have you played it yet?
Have you not? Oh,
no, I haven't played it as either. So.
Have you not? Oh my god! No. First time I played it was at the Meeple's Corner Pegasus Day.
Yeah.
That we had in. September time or something? Yeah, it's before. Was it before Essen?
No, it wasn't before Essen. It was after Essen.
Before, was after, was it? Oh, maybe in November then or something. But yeah, so I've played it a handful of times. We played it at Christmas, at the Meeple's Corner Christmas thing as well. And I love it. I've managed to convince a couple of people to buy it. So I just haven't convinced myself to buy a copy yet.
Nice.
Buying a house instead.
Yeah, do you know what? I know.
It's like you're playing Monopoly.
Yeah, well, there's one exception to that. That particular little rule of spending money, and I believe it will be coming up in the next segment.
Awesome. So yes, moving on to Kickstarter, and Kickstarter's doing a very good job of emptying my wallet quite lately.
Didn't notice. Yeah, just every like 5 minutes there's a Joel has backed.
Did my backing of a certain game remind you to back it as well?
It did. As soon as I got it, I was like, oh, crap. I was there at 5 o'clock going, oh, it's going to be any minute now. And then I forgot and went off. And then Rich turned up and we went off to the game thing. And then we sat down just about to start the next, the first game last night. And it popped up on my phone. I was like, oh, my God. Went straight on, back, June, done. Ah, better. I've got 30 days, but I had to do it right away.
Yeah. And said game is Fireball Island.
Up now? Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, my.
Get on it.
Oh, cheers for the heads up.
The full name, by the way, is Fireball Island, The Curse of Vulkar.
Yeah, I was just looking that up to check that again. Why have I not got... I have got it up. It's here. So, basically, it's Restoration Games have finally got hold of the rights to Fireball Island. It's an old classic American game that everyone seems to have nostalgia about playing when they were kids. But it was basically a roll and move... game moving across an island to try and get this valuable jewel from Vulkar himself. And it's basically roll and move, and you might get knocked over by a rolling marble coming from Vulkar's mouth down the mountain. So Restoration Games has finally got hold of it, and what they do is they do a grand job of restoring old games but actually turn them into good games as well. And that's what they've seemed to have done with this by the looks of it. It looks quite promising, doesn't it, Sam?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, this was always on my radar because of the... we've spoken about it before a couple of times, but there were in the 80s when I was a kid and getting games, playing games, the first, like, genuinely loved game I had was Lost Valley of the Dinosaurs by Waddington's. They also did Escape from Atlantis, and those were like, you know, very similar style box and everything. And the third that would have been in, I think, at least thematically spiritually connected to those two would be Fireball Island. But it never got released over here. So presumably they either it didn't do well enough or it was too expensive and they didn't think it was going to sell or whatever. But Waddington's never did, or MB even, never did Fireball Island in the UK. So I never got to try it or play it. So the fact that it's now coming out again and in a fully reskinned, rebuilt, re-mechanicked edition from Restoration Games is just superb. So I've got to get on that. I was transfixed this morning looking at a GIF on Twitter. Before it went live, and it was literally just this GIF of all these marbles pouring out of the mountaintop, knocking stuff over. It was just like I think I sat there for about 5 minutes not realizing that I was watching the same thing on a 5 second loop. It's just transfixing. It was awesome. So yeah, I mean it's you know, same Restoration Games thing of take it, polish it, improve it, and knock it out of the park, it looks like again. So yeah, fingers crossed.
So the main thing they changed on it is not roll and move anymore. It's using action cards from a hand of cards you got to either move your explorer around or activate Vulkar himself. That's a cool implementation. That makes it a bit more gamery, gives you a bit better chance of doing it. Also, they've made it that it's they've actually done it in the timeline now. It's like 30 years on since the last explorer's been, and some corporation has bought the island, and they're trying to like sell it to people as a holiday resort kind of thing, which is quite funny. Around the island, you can pick up holiday items as treasures, like a water bottle with the logo printed on it. Trying to think what else there was now. but certain things like that are all scattered around the island, which is quite funny. So they've put some humour, they've kept like kind of the quirkiness to it, but there is a lot of marbles going into this, especially if you get all the expansions as well.
Yeah. It's you're going to get your I hope you're going to get your money's worth. It's not a cheap one, but I don't think, you know, regardless, it ain't going to be cheap regardless of where it goes. But the other interesting thing is they're going to do a sort of like a bit like they did for Renegade did for Clank. There's a Fireball Island app, being added as well, which adds like extra things like sound effects and sort of randomizers and scoring and all that sort of stuff. So again, it's very light touch. There's only so much they can obviously do with the app, but it will just add that little extra flavor that I think will make it even more fun, you know, stick on a speaker and have it go. So it's just, it's unadulterated fun. It's not trying to be anything more than it is. It is literally a roll and move game without rolling, essentially. And you're just messing about watching stuff, you know, watching your mates get knocked over by marbles. It's Marble Run, the board game. It just looks stupid fun and huge, which obviously will look amazing.
What's also amazing is that they needed a pledge of a funding goal of 250,000, so that's quite a high goal target to reach for a board game. So they needed a lot of cash up front to get this done in the first place. They smashed that within the first hour. They also reached the $500,000 stretch goal by, what time was it, about 10 o'clock last night. So a good 4 hours or so after it released, they reached all their stretch goals they had planned. But they got more coming out, which is more exciting.
They're up to 840,000 now.
Yeah, definitely. So it's smashed all expectations, I think, for them. They knew it was going to be big, but I don't know. Especially when it reaches a million, like another certain Kickstarter. So this is quite amazing, and I think everyone I know that I follow on Kickstarter is back in this game as well.
I think I might have to invest. It looks fun.
I did show it to the daughter while we were waiting, and I said, check this out. So I showed her the video and she goes, oh, that looks cool. Yeah, she goes, what is it, a film? I said, no, it's a game. Oh, that does look fun. So
question is, have you got the shipwreck to go with it though?
Oh yeah, I backed it all.
Of course you did. How much is all it in. the full back?
$150.
Dollars. Okay. I was gonna say
dollars. Which is gonna be about
some of the souvenirs you can get, by the way, are things like t-shirt cannons, selfie stick, foam finger.
That's right.
A vuvuzela, that kind of stuff.
Everyone needs a vuvuzela.
if you're listening to this and you want to pop over and put your back in, you have plenty of time as it only went live yesterday. So you've got about 29 days to go.
It ends just about on my birthday. So it's kind of, it was meant to be, wasn't it?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to me.
All right, moving on before he sings too much. Let's go. So the other game we were talking about, I think we mentioned this in the last podcast, but it literally did launch after we released the last podcast, and that's Dinosaur Island, the relaunch, but it's basically Dinosaur the Island expansion, and Dulosaur Island, which is a two-player version of Dinosaur Island. And again, it's another one I'm backing because I can get all the goodies from the last Kickstarter to add to my retail version that I bought.
I was going to say, you wanted those dinosaur meeples, didn't you, really?
That's what definitely. You really wanted.
Definitely, yeah. It is a bit weird when you're playing a dinosaur theme park game and every dinosaur is a Triceratops.
Yeah, that was the one thing. It's like you almost just wish they hadn't bothered with the dinosaur meeples at all if they were going to do it that way in the end.
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's not knock the Triceratops.
Triceratops
is a strong dinosaur in its own right. It's got three horns, we're going to say. All right, let's not go crazy.
So, if you go along to the Kickstarter, you can back it and get the expansion and or you can get both. The two-player version of Dinosaur Island. And it says in the write-up in the Gumph that if you put another $30 into it, you can then get an upgrade kit, which is basically all the stretch goals from the first campaign, which is what I'm doing. So I can just add it to my retail cart.
Most importantly, you can get a copy of the base game as well.
Oh, yes, you can do that.
Which is what I'm doing, because we don't all own the base game,
Joel. No, well, yeah. You didn't want to take a risk on it when we were at Essen. That was your trouble.
Yeah. That was the first thing we got to Essen. We went to pick up that coaster park, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you were in Essen mode, where you couldn't stop just throwing money at anything you saw. And the guy happened to say, oh, these are selling out quite quickly. I'll take it.
I'm glad they did, because it was actually a good game.
It was actually considerably better than Coaster Park, yeah.
So are you doing the two-player really version? Because I swear you said you weren't doing
it. No, not interested in that. It doesn't look that great, and I'd be more than happy with the main version. Plus, I've played the main version two-player, and it plays perfectly well. It
does play fine, actually, yeah.
I don't need the two-player version. I am definitely going to get the new expansion, though, because everybody loves more dinosaurs and dinosaur meatballs and all the other bits.
I do like the fact that they are actually bringing out a Pandasaurus now.
Are they?
Yeah, one of the stretch goals is a Pandasaurus.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's Jurassic Park, isn't it? Jurassic Park the game. And
definitely.
Who doesn't want... Like, I grew up with that film. I absolutely loved that film. I can remember seeing it at the cinema. And it's just my, I really did enjoy playing. And the game itself is very, very good as well. I really quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. What I love with some of these stretch goals, I mean, they're bringing out all the same sort of thing, but there's an add-on bit to it where you get this extra section that you add to your board. It's kind of like a little mini mat, which will do something different. Each person gets one randomly. So you can get a goat pen, which is basically you get goats and then you can use those goats to bring your, what's it called? A fret marker up or down.
I thought you sacrificed goats instead of people being eaten in your park.
What I read was the goats helped your fret marker go up or go lower again.
I thought it
temporarily
stayed where it was. And I thought when it came to people getting eaten in your park when the dinosaurs escape, you can sacrifice a goat that you've got on your island instead of, because it's like the Tyrannosaurus eating the goat in the film.
Or you can get a petting zoo, which is quite nice.
Yeah, lots of baby dinosaurs. And baby dinosaur meeples they've done now as well, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they've done goats, they've done baby dinosaur meeples, baby raptors.
I think they worked out everyone quite liked the dinosaur meeples.
Yeah. Pterodactyls. It's not called pterodactyls. Pterodactyls.
Pteranodon.
Pteranodon.
Something like that. Moving on swiftly. What's the other thing? The Megadino. Have you seen the meeple for that?
No, what is it?
It's massive Megadino meeple. Like the one in the Jurassic World. Where they created that massive thing.
The Megalodon. Is that the swimming one?
No. It's a big...
Oh, the giant T-Rex type one. Yeah, I remember now, yeah.
They actually said you could put one of the meeples that come from the bag into its mouth.
That's epic. That's massive.
They wanted that, so they asked the designer to make it that big.
totally unnecessary, but I'm totally behind it.
Definitely. So there's some real good stuff coming from this, and I'm really excited to get all the good stuff coming. So yes,
and I'm excited to get my own copy.
Definitely. You will have still plenty of days. This campaign seems to be going on for ages, but
it does.
It's 16 days. I think it ends on Saturday, April the 21st. So it's plenty of time to jump in on that and pick up your own copy.
Yeah, very, very good game in its own right.
And there's
the fact that it's just Jurassic Park game. It's actually a good game.
And there's one last
there
game.
Is, yes. So for people who remember, listeners who remember our Essen podcast, one of the things we talked about was we really enjoyed coming across a lot of games that were sort of not available easily within the UK. And there's one particular publishing company, Taiwan Board Game Design. One of the games at their stand that Michael actually bought was a simple, quick, fun card game called Songbirds. And it's quite sort of an interesting game where you are sort of trying to basically trying to make certain color birds, which are basically the suits of a card, be the strongest in the columns or rows in a kind of grid that you have out on the table by sort of laying them from your hand. But at the same time, you only decide what color you actually control by keeping one of the cards from your hand back at the end. So the card you're left with is the card that of the color that you have. If it's two people going for the same color, then it's the person with the highest value. So while you want the highest values out, you don't want to keep all the rubbish back in your hand. Otherwise, you might not be able to guarantee that you're going to get the color that you've essentially been playing for all game. Really, really interesting. Quite a good fun game, and again, quite tricky to get to get hold of. And is currently out on Kickstarter with a few extra bonuses and bits as well.
It's not really. The Kickstarter ended.
Oh, did it?
But you can still go to the Kickstarter site and pre-order a copy.
Yeah. Who's publishing it now? Because I don't think it's not
Daily Magic Games, one of Sam's favourite publishers.
You say that. I like Valeria Card Kingdoms. The other ones got traded. So. I do love Valeria Card Kingdoms.
Yeah, so. This is actually. I've only played it once with Michael, and actually, it is a very clever card game. So, and it's quite small, compact, quite travelable. So, if you do fancy,
Wasn't it called like Birdie Fight or something?
Yeah, it was called it's Bird Fight on Board Game Geek. Because I had trouble trying to find it when I was doing the videos, but yeah, it's either Bird Fight or Songbirds.
It was Songbirds on it, so it's still Songbirds at Essen.
Yeah. So
but yeah, just as a little aside there for people who want to track down some less easily obtainable games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think that's a wrap, gentlemen. Anyone got anything else they want to add quickly?
Not that I can think of. I've got to go back to my building site and get on with things before my flight to Aberdeen tomorrow.
Where are you?
Where am I going?
No, where are you now? You're at home, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm sat in my lounge at the moment, but Megan's currently doing all the ironing, so I'm going to go and help her do stuff cool. before we go. So we've got to get a 5 o'clock flight in the morning. Nice. So got to get going. But yeah, it's worth it. Going to the Brewdog AGM with some friends up in Scotland. So
nice.
Nice. Yeah. Are you part of Brewdog, eh?
I have exactly 2 shares in Brewdog, which is the minimum I could buy.
Yeah. Are you involved with Wild Beer as well then?
Yeah, I like Wild Beer, okay. I mean, some of their stuff's a bit avant-garde for my tastes, but
I find that with Brewdog though, but both of them.
Oh, right. for a good localish southwest based one, check out Verdant, who are based in Falmouth. Basically the top dogs as far as I'm concerned in the southwest right now.
Well, they've got a lot of competition in the southwest.
Well, it's growing as well. A lot.
Remember, get them to sponsor the podcast.
We'll start a beer
discussion
podcast.
For another day. Yeah. We should have a beer podcast. You and I went on a brewery tour just on Saturday. Actually, it's very good. The Flying Monk Brewery. Have you come across that?
No, where's that one?
It's based Chippenham Way, just Wiltshire, just outside Swindon. It's nice beer actually.
Good stuff. You can't go wrong with a brewery tour.
No, exactly. And it was a very well supplied brewery tour as well.
The best kind, the only kind,
the best
to
kind,
do.
Yeah. The only downside was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, right.
And we were
oh.
hanging for the rest of the day.
Excellent. Yeah. There's one like Hanlon's Brewery just outside Exeter. They do something similar where you go for the brewery tour there, and they do like a meal afterwards, and it's basically unlimited beer. You just keep going back to the bar and getting whatever you want from the taps. And Yeah, the trouble is you've got to drive there to get there, so it's not so fun. Well, you don't have to. Someone has to drive to get there, pretty much. But if you can get the bus or a taxi or something, then and a big enough group of you, then that would obviously be worth it. But,
Well, yeah, my brother-in-law. Maybe I'll try and plan that one for.
Cool, let's do it.
Boom.
Where's he gone?
No, I'm not gone. I was waiting for something to load up. Come on. Right, 1 minute. Just checking something quickly. Trying to be quick. Where is it?
I thought you'd just fallen asleep with us talking about beer.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. What's that up to? Never mind. I was hoping it just hit the 1,000 views mark, but it hasn't yet.
Oh, is that your bit heavy hitters?
Heavy hitters is nearly, it's like 50 views away from 1,000 at the minute.
Oh.
Which is pretty good.
Come on, people, get watching.
So definitely please go over to YouTube channel. It's Devon Dice UK, I think. And like, subscribe. Comment if you have to. You can say weird stuff if you want to, John. That goes for you too. Do all that, because I'm trying to build up the YouTube channel, so that will help. So this has been Devon Beer Podcast, and you can go to Facebook and like that. Go to Twitter like that. Go to YouTube, subscribe like that. Go to the Guild if you want to. It's a bit desolate over there.
Yeah, thanks to Nick Shaw for kind of constantly trying to enliven it.
Is he there? Oh, I feel embarrassed now.
Yeah, he did post something up to sort of go, oh, just to try and get the guild going again, I'll post a question, and then I'm not sure if we even responded.
Sorry.
I promise to do it next time.
I haven't been on Board Game Geek for a while, and it's only just recently I've been going on there to put my videos on that section. I've been going back to Board Game Geek. So, that's why I've not been there. I'll maybe pop in there and see what's going on.
I'm going to make more of an effort. I was kind of picking up on the social media stuff last year, and with everything kind of happening, being so busy at work and stuff, I've just been forgetting to do it. But I promise my late New Year's resolution will be to try and do a bit better and blogging and stuff.
We'll try
and pick it up and re-enliven this stuff.
Yeah. Maybe Lewis can adopt the Twitter account, since he doesn't have one. He could be Devon Dice Twitter for a bit.
Yeah, I could take it over. I'd give you all my thoughts.
This game, especially when he's on one of his brewery tours.
This game's shit. This beer's great. Play Dinosaur Island. This game's shit.
Not Dinosaur Island. It's not shit.
No, Dinosaur Island's pretty brilliant.
Anyway, I was in the middle of the outro. I've been Joel Wright. This has been episode so-and-so, and this has been Devon Dice the Podcast. These have been
Sam Freeman. You can find me at Spoon of Milk on Twitter.
And Lewis Jones. I don't have Twitter, but probably should, turns out.
Maybe you should. One day.
I wouldn't bother. It's a nihilistic pile of nonsense. I wouldn't worry.
That's been my main thought about it.
You're pretty close to reality.
does it make me question why I'm not on it then?
I think you would love it.
The only reason really to follow to go on Twitter now is to follow Grumpy Skeletor. That's the only reason I go on it anymore.
Grumpy Skeletor.
Yeah, trust me. You want to follow Grumpy Skeletor.
sounds like my sort of thing.
Might have to go and do that then. Okay, so that's been us. Catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Right, I'm going to go and do some mining.
Okay. Boom. Cheers, dude.
See you later.
Cheers,
see you later.
Chat to you.